Yo. Welcome. What's up? Thank you. Yes, thank you so much for being here. You're in for a big treat today. This is Greg Johnson, live on 95. Thank you for checking out all our episodes at liveon95.com. Stream us everywhere. We do this show on the side of the highway, working a double here today, 6 to 6 at the gas station on Interstate 95. Coming up, Kara Klank is here. We are so honored. Kara is a comedian, a writer, and a co-host of the wildly popular crime podcast That's Messed Up, an SVU podcast, which is based on Law & Order SVU. It's a part of Exactly Right Media. Kara Klank, thank you so much for being here at the gas station. We love That's Messed Up.
Oh my gosh, Greg, not a problem. I was happy to hear from you, happy to do it. I remember our times together in New York fondly, and yeah, it's great to see you.
Yes, the best. How is stand-up? I want to talk about stand-up, but I want to talk about That's Messed Up too, because
yeah.
How long have you been doing That's Messed Up with Lisa?
We just hit our 3-year mark. We started this podcast like in December of the pandemic. I mean, it had been a year, over a year of before the pandemic, like pitching it, getting greenlit, and then getting like actually getting launched. So we launched December of 2020, and so we've been going strong for 3 years. And luckily, there's SVU, the television show. If for your listeners, I have a podcast called That's Messed Up about Law & Order SVU. We recap an episode, we talk about the true crime it's based on, and then we interview an actor or sometimes a writer or a producer from the show, but most of the time actors that was in the episode that we talked about. And yeah, like thankfully SVU just started its 25th season. So as long as they keep going, we still have hundreds of more episodes ahead of us, because almost every episode's based on a crime. And even if it's not, you can kind of draw a line between an episode and a crime. So
I know. I feel like people forget that because Law & Order is so iconic, obviously, for many reasons. But each episode's based on a real crime, and you talk about these real crimes.
Most of them. I mean, and some of them, they like base it, but then they flip the ending on the show so it doesn't happen the way it happened in real life. Or they'll take two crimes, like our very first pilot episode that we did that actually it's never been released. It was just what we did to pitch the network to show our chemistry, if you will. That one was based on Casey Anthony, but then fully pivots to be about anti-vaxxing. It's the Hillary Duff episode if you're an SVU head. So like that, you know, they'll combine things. They'll do episodes that are just kind of about stuff that's like happening. Like the week there was an episode about microchipping people. You know what I mean? Like, so it's not always a crime, but there's almost always, I would say 85 to 90% of the episodes have a direct true crime link. And if not that other 10%, there's probably lines you could draw, you know, stuff that,
oh my God,
you know,
how does that Hillary Duff episode go?
So in the Hillary Duff episode, her daughter goes missing, and it's this whole thing of like, where's my daughter? And like Gail O'Grady plays her mom, and they're like trashy. Like they wear like rest in peace, little angel t-shirts to court, like they're trash, but her daughter goes missing, her 2-year-old daughter. And it's very Casey Anthony. Oh, the car smelled weird the other day, blah, blah, blah. And then it turns out that her daughter died of measles that she caught at the playground from an unvaccinated kid.
Because
the little girl was under one, so she wasn't vaccinated yet. So then it turns into a full, you know, anti-vax thing of this woman who like lives in a beautiful brownstone in Manhattan and is like, it's my choice. And they've done other episodes about anti-vaxxing. We actually had Missy Pyle on to talk about, she played a notorious anti-vaxxer in a later episode. You know, 25 seasons, over 500 episodes, they revisit some of the same topics, you know?
Yes, and that was a wonderful fan experience getting you to explain some of that episode to me, because it's so fun to hear you do it on the podcast app.
It takes so much longer on the podcast.
What was your level of interest in true crime before you started That's Messed Up?
Oh, I've always been like a big true crime person. And I remember when I came up with the idea for this podcast, I really like, somebody, I was just talking to a friend, another comic, and was like, oh, I've seen every episode of SVU more than once. And she was like, oh, that's a good idea for a podcast. And then I was like, oh, actually, like, that's a great idea for something that another way into true crime. Because at that moment in 2019, when I came up with the idea, or maybe it was even 2018, to be honest, like, true crime was already saturated. And now it's like 5 years later, it was already so saturated. So I was like, oh, this is kind of like a different way in. And some people listen to our podcast that don't watch the show. They're like, they either stopped when Christopher Maloney left, or they catch it here and there. A few people have never seen it. Like, they've come to see our live shows and they'll see a picture of like Richard Belzer and they go, that's what Munch looks like. Like, they have no idea. They just like us. They like us describing the episode to them and then talking about the true crime. And like, people like our relationship and our friendship. And we are really like, we are both Virgos, but we're on the most opposite side of the spectrum, I would say, possible. Like, we're just very, you know, we're very different. She's younger than me. She's like a single headlining comic. I've got two kids and I'm more of a writer now. And like, you know, I'm really organized and she's like, my, you know, like all over the place. So we kind of have like a fun yin and yang thing going on. But yeah.
What was it like? Do you remember the first time you met? Like, what is the actual origin story between you and Lisa?
Well, so we talk about this. We've talked about this. Yeah. But like, you know, we met, but we knew each other. Like, you know how it's like, you know, when the new Chicago people would come over to New York, you'd be like, oh, there's a new crop of Chicago people. Like, and I knew of her and, you know, Megan Gailey and Joel Kim Booster and like this whole class of Chicago comics that kind of moved to New York at the same time. So I knew of her and I think I booked her on my show, or we were on, you know, I used to run a show that you used to do at the UCB Theater in the East Village for years and years. And
yes. And now you still run in LA, Better Half Comedy. Am I correct?
Yeah, my husband and I now run a show together in LA that's a weekly. That's great. But if you build
to Jared. Will Jared be on the show too? I hope.
Oh yeah, he will absolutely do it. Yeah, you should.
I
want to
ask you more about Jared, like. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we remember knowing each other and probably saying hi and meeting each other at other things. But the first time we actually like remember talking to each other is in a green room at UCB East and talking about how much we both love Law and Order. And literally she was telling me about this Twitter account called Doink Doink, which is supposed to sound like the dun dun sound or whatever. And it's this Twitter account where if you follow it, it tells you whenever an SVU episode is playing in the US, what channel, what episode it is. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And I started following it. And then we became friends like kind of a couple years later, and we were working on a different project together. We were actually working on writing a movie together. And I had another co-host lined up for this podcast. And she was like, listen, I don't think I have time for it. Like, it was actually, it was Jackie Zabrowski, who you probably know. Jackie, nice. From the Murder Fist crew. And I love her. We're still friends. We're literally getting drinks tomorrow night. But she was like, I'm so busy. I have these other podcasts. Like, I don't think I can do it. And I was like, no worries. And then Lisa happened to be at my house. And I was like, would you want to do this thing with me? And like, literally, she told her manager at the time, who got us like meetings like the next week we were pitching it. So it really all happened like kind of serendipitously, if you will. It was like a really wild confluence of events that led us to this podcast. But yeah,
that's
it's been
fantastic.
Awesome.
Well, I gotta tell you, Kara, that I was shocked because it got back to me through my cousin and our wonderful friend that she went to one of your sold out live shows of That's Messed Up, and you shouted me out.
Yes!
And quoted my stand-up comedy joke. I was so thrilled. Thank you.
No, that could have been one of many shows, Greg, because I talk about this joke you do all the time because, you know, sort of true crime procedural adjacent is the show Bones, and you used to do a bit about how the announcer on Fox would be like, coming up on Bones, next on Fox. And like the way you said it, my sister and I say that to each other all the time. Oh. I say it at all these live shows because anytime there's an actor that's been on Bones, or Lisa was watching Bones for a minute, and so every time she'd bring it up, I'd be like, oh, did you see that on Bones? And I would just like say it like you, and then I would give you credit. So I'm sure that was like a joke that you did so offhand, but I remember you doing it at my show and I was like, he sounds exactly like the VO guy on Fox. Like, that is how they say it. And it really like always makes me laugh. My sister and I are always like bones on bucks. Like we say it all the time. So
Oh,
yes, that absolutely happened. And I'm so glad that me name dropping you brought me back here
oh my
to
gosh,
this
I
pod.
was not only so flattered, I was just blown away. I was sort of like in the dark as to what the live podcast was. And then when I found out it was That's Messed Up, I was like so just like grateful and honored and all this stuff. So how have the live shows and touring with the podcast changed like your experience performing?
I mean, it's been so amazing. Like, you know, I started stand up in 08, so like I've been doing it 15 years or something. And I'm definitely slowed down on stand up a little just because I have kids and like I'm trying to write and I'm doing this podcast. And so to me, it's like something had to give. I'm working on like a new stand up project though now. So you know how it goes. Like sometimes with stand up, it can ebb and flow a little bit. You're like, I was so into it doing, 10 shows a week for years and years during my New York tenure. And then when you move out to LA, your schedule slows down a little bit anyway. Just that's like the nature of LA. It's like people are not doing four, five spots a night in LA like they do in New York. And then with the kids, and like, then it was the pandemic, and I was like, do I know how to do stand up anymore?
Oh my God.
But through doing my show with Jared at in Echo Park here in LA, this weekly that we do, I really, every time I try to quit stand up like fully, I'm like, I love it too much. It's so fun. But you do it for so long, and it's like, Jared, my husband, was a headliner. I would open for him, and it's like, maybe there's some of the audience that's there to see him. Maybe some of the audience just went online and to the website of the club and said, I feel like seeing comedy tonight. And okay, this guy's been on XYZ shows. I'll go see him. That was that. And that's like kind of how it is, unless you're like, a huge draw comedian where the clubs are selling out for you. And it's cool to me with this podcast that like everybody that's in the audience is there because they like our podcast. Like they're there because they want to see us. They're there for a reason. I mean, we joke because we actually did have walk-ins at our show in Salt Lake City, and it was a bunch of Mormons on a group date. And it was so funny because you could tell they just did not know what it was at all. Like, it's literally just our graphic is like a poster, it's a drawing of the two of our faces, and then it just says, That's Messed Up and SVU Podcast. So I don't know why they didn't ask when they bought the tickets at the front what it was, but we immediately like launch into like probably a story about a guy finding out he's having sex with his sister. And they're like, they are horrified. They all start to get up after like a half an hour, 45 minutes. And but I would say, but that was an anomaly. And normally it is just like, it's so fun to have people just be sort of like into something that you're doing. And I always loved doing stand up, and people definitely would come and say, I love your stand up and I came here to see you. But that wasn't like the main, people were just sort of catching me doing stand up. And it is nice to have people intentionally come out to see you.
Yes, that is phenomenal. Round of applause for that and for That's Messed Up and for all the phenomenal That's Messed Up fans. Hey, you mentioned your husband, the comedian, the genius, Jared Logan. How does he feel about stand-up comedy right
Well,
now?
he what's so funny is like in the pandemic, he's like, I'm done with stand up. I'm never doing it. And I was like, what? And
That's
he
what I was
actually
like.
like
I thought it might not even come back.
he actually did a half hour for Epics over the pandemic. Like they shot it in the pandemic. He ran it in the backyard for our pod. That was like
That's
how he prepared
amazing.
it. But like, does anybody see it? Who has Epics? Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, so he did that. And then after that, he's like, I'm done with stand up. And then, it comes back around. Like when things opened up again, he's like, now I want to get back into stand up. And he focused on it and he worked on it more. But like the thing with me, and without getting too into the weeds of like, the difference between a mother and a father and the emotional and mental labor that one puts into a household, I have a lot going on. And when I think in my mind about what I could do stand-up jokes about, it's like all about my kids. And like I can do that, and I've done that, and I have like 15 minutes I'm doing on my kids right now. So for me, I just found, oh, I used to just sit down and write stand-up and be like, oh, you know what's funny about the subway? And I just have like had so many life experiences like happening day to day, or like dating and all this other stuff. And now it's just like, yeah, when everyone's like, what's going on? I'm like, oh my God, my kid will not stop shitting his pants. Like, it's literally just kid stuff. And I guess I'm paranoid that people don't want to hear that, but maybe they do. I don't know. So I just
Yeah.
like, It just my mind is like, I don't have the physical time I feel to sit down and write stuff. I get booked still around town, not like
I'm sure.
With crazy regularity, but when I go do a show, I'm like, okay, this is a good opportunity to throw a couple new ideas at the wall and see what sticks. But yeah, I don't know. You know, also it's like, so much has changed. I mean, Greg, don't you feel like our class of comic, our like age group of comedy saw like the wildest change? Like you would never see some of the comics that are freaking killing the industry right now doing that back in our day, like back in the day
totally
where it was
agree.
Like this, the TikTok and the social of it all, or like somebody getting big on a reality show and then starting to do stand up. You know, it's like these are people we're competing with now, where it used to just kind of be like, who's funniest, you know? And
yeah, I think every generation kind of deals with that. But I think that we definitely had it the hardest because of the advent of not just social media, but like iPhones, all that.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too. It's like, it's not even, oh, I don't really cut my clips up. I don't really have clips. I don't really do the whole TikTok thing with clips. But even when I find the audiences, I think the audiences are like so used to the passive experience of lying on the couch, scrolling TikTok, seeing a funny video and going, haha, that's funny, keeping scrolling, that now when they're at comedy shows, they're watching and they're like, huh, that's funny. Like they're not like, and I'm talking like not just about myself. Like I see comics out there who are fucking pros. They are the funniest comics and they have to work so hard to get my audience specifically at my live show is like a lot of, not the podcast live show, my stand-up show is like a lot of 20 somethings and they're just different. Like it's just like, remember the shows we used to do back in Williamsburg in the day that were so hipster where they would kind of like cross their arms and be like, let's see it. Go ahead. Make me laugh. Like those shows, which were always so satisfying when you actually did win them over. But like, that feels like a lot of the audiences now, you know, cause they're like, I don't know, this isn't as funny as like the guy who imitates his Southern mom or whatever. You know what
totally.
I mean? Like, I'm not even like picking out anybody in particular, but like,
oh, I can. I mean, such, like, you know, the Matt Reifs of the world.
I was going to say, like, Matt Reif, like, he to me is like, when I see his material, I'm like, you're like a comic that's been doing it 2 years when I was coming up. You know, like, you seem like a guy who doesn't really have that much material and his crowd work is pretty good. He's a personable guy, you know?
But you're being nice.
If that's what you like about him, then that's crowd work. It's just not the same. He's not like, he doesn't have the material is hack as shit. And it's just like, wow, I can't, but you know.
This stuff is multi-layered, I feel like.
I feel like it's more politically divided. Like, you know, people can't laugh at the same stuff all the time because of their politics and all this stuff too.
People are harder to impress. They also think I could be sitting at home watching, like, you know, Jim Gaffigan on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think in 2008, there weren't like ubiquitous stand-up specials. And certainly in 2008, and it's a big thing, like people just didn't have their iPhones. So it was like people were more locked in at a live show.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think
How do you find, I mean, doing a podcast, I feel like for That's Messed Up, I feel like that there's for your creative energy to go into that, it must, does it feel in a way like more productive or more like satisfying in terms of building an audience than like going out and doing a 10-minute set of stand-up, right?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And I mean, I have to give like credit. We're on a network that has a very popular podcast. So like I do think our product is awesome, but we did have a bit of like a leg up in terms of getting to an audience because they have a huge following on this network. And so that was helpful. But yeah, like I love doing the podcast. I find like for Lisa, my co-host, Lisa Trigger, everybody, very funny stand-up comedian. Like, I think it's very much like feeding each other. Like people from the podcast go see her stand-up and then people that like her stand-up, some of them get into our podcast, you know? So that's like more for her. For me, yeah, I love doing my podcast. I don't think that it's kind of unquantifiable, like a 10-minute stand-up set. Yeah, what's that getting anybody? You know, like what's that really getting anybody? It's like of the practice or whatever for the bigger stuff. But You know, it's just so funny. Like the trajectory is so different now. Like when we were coming up, it was like you try to get Montreal, you try to get late night, then you try to get a half hour on Comedy Central, then you try to get like, I don't know, then you're headlining around the country. Like now it's like your Comedy Central barely exists, you know, and you can get Montreal and absolutely nothing happens. You can do late night and absolutely nothing happens. So many of the shows barely have late night anymore. So many of the late night shows barely have stand up anymore. Like, you know, some of them I think have four stand ups a year. So it's like, it's just not, but you know, back in the day, people say in the Johnny Carson days, you did Johnny Carson and you were famous the next day. You were now a famous comedian. So, but like when we were coming up, you did Conan and you went back to serving chips at a Mexican restaurant the next day. You know,
I
like it was
know.
not like it's always the path has been obviously it is different for every generation, but now it's like, yeah, you could just literally start putting up funny TikToks and be selling out clubs within a year. You know, that it
Yeah.
took somebody else, that took somebody of my like age range or my years of starting 10 years to build up to that time, to that accomplishment. It's just different
Yeah.
now, you know? But I bet people could say the same thing about, I bet Jerry Seinfeld would say the same thing about like, oh, now podcasts are at the comedy clubs. You know what I mean? Like, so we try to make our live show like really an experience because I've seen some other podcast live shows where it's literally just two people sitting in front of a card table, sitting at a card table, like talking, doing their podcast. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't really want to charge people ticket price.
I
I
pay for
mean,
you too.
but like ticket price. And sometimes at these clubs, it's two drink minimum. Like it's a night out. We wanted to give people like a little bit more. So when we first went out on our first tour, we did, well, we do PowerPoint presentations, like sort
Awesome.
of graphic jokes that go with all of our recaps. We don't talk about a true crime because we're like, it's Friday night. You don't need to hear about like some baby being found in a ditch, you know? And then we play like little games with the audience where there's audience participation. And we used to do trivia, but that was really fun, but it ended up being a little bit too time consuming, so we've cut that. But we do games and stuff, and then we meet everybody afterwards too. Like we do free meet and greets where we, you know, well, we sell merch, but you don't have to buy it to meet us. And like, so it's, we try to give people a show, you know, we try.
Yeah, let's talk about the meet and greets. Let's talk about your fans because these are true crime fans. These are mostly Law and Order SVU fans. Although I'm surprised to hear that you said some of your fans have never seen the show, which is amazing and
Some of them have
speaks
never
to your
seen.
talents.
They've
What are
never
some of the
seen
most
or they don't watch
surprising?
regularly.
Amazing. What are the surprising fan interactions? Does anything come to mind in these meet and greets or even over email or
Well,
something?
first of all, I'll say what I love is like we did start in pandemic and it was like I feel a very traumatizing time for a lot of people. I mean, I
Yeah.
don't know how your pandemic was.
Oh, it's
Like
terrible.
I
I
had
could talk to you about your pandemic. First of all, Kara, I gotta say, you are a heroic mom for even navigating. Well, I mean, in general, I'm sure you're a phenomenal mother, but for navigating the whole pandemic and all this stuff,
Well,
you're a heroic mom.
I gotta say thank you. I gotta say though, the hero award goes to the kids that were in school. I mean, when the pandemic happened, I had a 10-month-old, 11-month-old. So I just, you know, I had to deal with her, but I wasn't having to like get her on Zoom to learn. Like those parents like deserve a fucking bonus from the government. Like it's so wild what people had to do, like while working, get your kids to go to Zoom school or whatever. But then I
Yeah.
did get pregnant in the pandemic and had another child in the pandemic. So
Amazing.
it was a wild time, but it does make me feel really good when people say like you really helped me through this dark time, like that you got me through the pandemic, or people say I'm just having a bad time right now and you're really helping me through. And we do get those messages from people and it's like, wow, I just think I'm on here goofing off with my friend talking about a show I like and then sprinkling a little murder on top of it. And it's really, people are really loving it and they're really feeling like we're keeping them company. Like people listen while they're doing jobs that are kind of like monotonous or jobs that require like concentration, I guess, and they just like to listen to us and zone out. So I like that. I always get like really weirded out when somebody's like really geeking out to meet us because I'm like, oh, we're just like regular. Like I get why you would think that way about another person, but like I'm just like, who cares, you know? But they also are so sweet. Like they bring us like some podcasts have like toxic fandoms. I would say we have like the actual opposite. Like our fans are just, they're so smart. They're so knowledgeable. Like anytime we're like, I don't really know what this means, we get like 50 DMs that are like, this is what this means. I'm a lawyer. I'm actually a medical examiner. I do this, I do that. Like they're really smart and they like know so much about us that we forget. Oh, Lisa will forget. Like, oh, I just mentioned that I like this thing and people will bring it to her, or they bring me presents for my kids. They're like, we know your daughter Rosie likes spooky stuff. So she has like five stuffies on her bed that are like from my listeners, you know?
Oh my
So it's really
God.
like, it is just really like a nice group, you know? Like
Yeah.
it's a nice, they're really nice people that listen. And I always refer to them as female. We do have male listeners. I would say
Yeah.
they're, well, a lot of gay male listeners, which we love. And then some straight male listeners that listen, you know, also non-binary and all kinds love our show and we love them. But yeah, it's like response and like, you know, they call us out on stuff in a nice way most of the time. Sometimes we get a jerk slips through, but like, you know, they'll be like, hey, you kind of said this, and like that's like not really a great way to talk about it because it stigmatizes this and that. And I'll be like, oh. Thank you so much for letting me know. Like, I'm always like, thank you. Because it sounds really woo-woo in LA, but it's like call in culture rather than call out culture, you know? Like instead of calling someone out, it's like taking the time to sort of, and again, it's not everybody's responsibility to educate other people, but to take a minute and explain why I did something wrong when it seems like I wasn't doing it in a malicious way. I'm always learning from them. So that's good.
That's great. And wow, has it really been 25 years of Law and Order SVU?
Yeah, SVU started in 99. So like this
Whoa.
fall will be exactly 25 years, but this is the 25th season.
Now, I know you talk about this on your show, but for all the fans, like, is there like a prime era of those 25 years that you point to? I think you and Lisa tend to favor the earlier episodes, right?
Yeah, I mean, I love the Maloney years, of course. There's a lot of great stuff in the post-Maloney years. And I think honestly, had he not left, we would not get the Olivia Benson development that we've gotten like over the years, where she's this like major boss bitch now and like a different, like, you know, character than she was when he was on. I would say for me, I love the first 12 seasons, but I would say seasons 2 to 12 are Neil Baer as the showrunner. We've had him on our podcast twice. We love him. And because there was comedy in the show. Like if you watch it now, it's pretty deadly serious. Like there's maybe a line of funniness, but like back then we had Belzer, who is a
The
stand-up
bells.
comedian, and then we had him playing off Ice-T, and even Maloney and Hargitay had a funny line here or there. Or like she would have these funny lines like, and I want your balls in a blender, but ain't life a bitch. You know, she would have these like badass kind of lines that she would say to perps. And it's like kind of not there anymore. And I get it. Like TV's changed and they're probably going after an audience that's like into like watching procedural shows that are on like Netflix where you binge them and you want to kind of like get to. So I don't know, but like Munch obviously left many seasons ago and RIP Richard Belzer has passed on. But the comedy is gone. And so I really like when we, another thing I'll mention about our live shows is we tend to cover the shows that are not based on true crimes that are the campiest. We cover the campiest episodes. Like we do the one where Christopher Maloney infiltrates an animal smuggling ring. We do one where, you know, Mark Paul Gosselaar and Elizabeth Banks make porn to pay the bills because their daughter is sick. Like, oh,
Whoa.
it's great. It's called Responsible. And like that's a season 2 or 3, I believe. And so I would say for me, I really love seasons like 6, 7, 8. It's also kind of like the golden age of guest stars. Like that's, I think those are the years where we were getting like Robin Williams and Martin Short. And like I love when they would get comedians on to play absolute like psychos. Like the Martin Short episode, he's a psychopath. Like, you know,
Yeah,
and
I
it's
heard
like,
you talking about that one, and you mentioned
yeah.
how there's even a line or two where he can't help but be funny, you said.
Yeah, he can't not be funny. Same with like Robin Williams is not necessarily playing a psycho as much, but he is a criminal. But like Margaret Cho plays a madam. Bob Saget is in an episode. Like we had him on our podcast as well as Margaret. Like we love the comedy like tie-ins, and that all a lot of that's mostly happening earlier seasons, but that 5, 6, 7, 8 range, I feel like is when the show is really firing on all cylinders. 7 is the season where Mariska Hargitay won an Emmy. So that was like kind of when the show started getting more attention and was really like hitting its stride, let's say. And so I recommend those.
That's amazing. You mentioned having the OG showrunner on twice. What other guests sort of stick out? I mean, have you ever met Mariska or Maloney?
No, so we haven't met Mariska. We went to Ice-T's star ceremony on the Walk of Fame. It
My
was,
God.
it's like, it's so funny. It's not something I would ever do, but Lisa was like, we have to go. And I was like, okay. Like I happened to have the day free or like a few hours free in the middle of the day and was like, all right. So we didn't think, no disrespect to Ice-T, but we just
Of
didn't really
course.
know how big those things are and how many people come to them. And not to mention, Ice-T is a California, that was like a hometown hero kind of situation. So he had a lot of people there. And there's like a press area and a VIP area where like his guests sit and then press. And then there's like the pen for all the regular people. And we were like, Lisa was texting me as I was getting there going, we cannot sit with the regular people. Like we got to do something. And I go, all right. So like I went up to the woman that was running the pen of the press area. And I was like, hi, we have like a pretty popular podcast about Law and Order SVU. Like I would say a lot of people that are getting into the press area, like I think maybe Access Hollywood or like local LA TV stations. I'm like, we can take this directly to more people that actually are obsessed with Ice-T. So I like pitch this woman and she goes, why didn't you guys RSVP? And I go, it must have been a mistake with our PR people. Like I fully did like cosplay as a more like important person. And we ended up talking our way into that. So we got
Yes.
into the press area. We got to see Ice-T's daughter, Chanel, jump into Mariska's arms. Mariska walked by us with her daughter. We didn't say anything because we didn't want to be weird. And she was with her kid. So we like left it. So we haven't had, we've had Diane Neal, we've had BD Wong, we've had Stephanie March. We've had Dan Florek, who plays Captain Kragen. We've had, and he was one of our first big gets, and it was amazing because he famously, in the episode where Maloney infiltrates an animal smuggling ring, he opens a basketball that has a gibbon inside of it and it hugs him. And when we talked to him, he had an oil painting of that moment that I forget the
Oh.
origin of it, but someone had given it to him. It's like this beautiful, majestic photo,
Wow.
like drawing, painting of him with a gibbon or like a gibbon hugging him. It's so good. It's on our
Wow.
Instagram if you go way back. But so we are honestly like a little bit like we haven't even tried to get Mariska or Ice-T or Christopher Maloney because we're like, once we get Mariska, the podcast is kind of over. Where do we go from there? So we're thinking like maybe in a year or so we'll start to like, broach that. But like we really want to do it up when we meet her. We want to like go to the set, interview her on the set. You know what I mean? Like we think that would be like so fun. But who knows? I hope we get her. We've been surprised at how many great people we've gotten. But also sometimes it's like we ask people that are not very famous and they decline. Like I think people are
Oh.
worried about saying something dumb or they're older and they don't know what podcasts are. We had like a 90 something year old woman on a call into our podcast. Like she didn't know how to do Zoom, but she called the number to talk to us. We interviewed her on the
Wow.
phone. So like, we try to be inclusive of age. We are inclusive of all different kinds of people, but having the showrunner on was like such a gag. And we love Diane Neal. She's like so fun. She's a little bit zany. We had her on our New York live show as well. She came as a surprise guest, our show that we did January of 2023 at Sony Hall. And it was like the audience just went absolutely nuts when she walked out on stage. Like, but yeah, those are some of the memorables.
So you discuss episodes and you discuss the crimes they're based on. Has anyone unsolicited from the episodes or from the actual crimes ever reached out to you?
Yes. Well, somebody did reach out that was a relative of someone from one of the crimes and say, like, I was wondering if you would like to talk to me.
You're like, nope.
Because, but the episode had already gone out, and I was like,
I'm good.
like, it's complicated. I don't want to say what episode I'm talking about, but it's complicated because it was kind of an episode with like a moral thing, like whether to let somebody die or not. And I was like, I pretty much firmly stand on the one side of this. And I don't think talking to you is really going to convince me otherwise. And like, he hit me up on Facebook and I was like, I just don't think I'm going to engage in this. This feels like it's not going to go anywhere good. But other people have written and said, this happened in my hometown. I went to school with this person. So we do get a lot of like, you know, boots on the ground, if you will. Yeah. We recently did a story about a woman in Canada who killed her parents and her brother with her boyfriend in a very natural born killers type of situation. And we got a person that wrote us and was like, I know her. I hang out with her now. Like, and
oh
was,
my God.
Yeah. So
sweet flex.
You know, we got reach, baby. We got reach. So, but like with the real story, I will say the only time we pretty much like, there's a lot of the episodes where you can really tell. It's like, this is the Michael Jackson episode. This is the Woody Allen episode. You know, like there are some that are so obvious, but then there's some where we're like, I don't know. And there's lists on the internet and there's a wiki that's like for SVU. That's like a fandom page. And that has lists of all the crimes people think. And sometimes I read those and I look into those crimes and I go, this has nothing to do with this case. That's a stretch. But sometimes we go with that one and we were about to cover a crime and we ended up interviewing this writer and she was like, oh no, that's based on this. And we were like, oh,
wow.
We didn't even think of that. We didn't even think of it. So wow. We ended up researching something different.
So there's like a game involved of you trying to match the episode with the crime. Yeah.
And sometimes people are like, no, this is clearly based on this. And it's like, unfortunately, multiple children have fallen through the cracks of the foster care system. So it could be based on various children. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like you can't definitive unless you're a writer from the show. And we actually had another writer on who we love. And I've seen him on the picket lines and stuff during strikes. And he's come to see our live shows in LA. If it's one of the seasons he wrote on, I'll message him and be like, do you remember what this is based on? And he'll tell me and he has all his notes and stuff.
Oh my gosh, amazing. How far do you think we as a society will take our true crime obsession? In other words, it's still peaking, right? I mean, know. How long can this last?
It's wild. I'm sure there's like a full psychological report on our nation's like obsession. And is it just us? Are people as obsessed in like Spain with true crime as we are? Like, I don't know. It feels like I know they are in like other English speaking countries, like obviously the UK and Australia and stuff, but and Canada, of course. But like, it feels like, I don't know. I have not heard, I'll hear of podcasts that are from Canada, Australia and the UK about true crime. And I've never been like, no one's ever been like, oh, there's a great French true crime podcast, but maybe there is. And I don't know.
The staircase, right?
I don't know why anybody would send that to me. I don't speak French. But like, it is wild, and it's so crazy to me how Netflix keeps finding stories like that they're, yeah. You know, because, you know, the 70s and 80s were like a serial killer heyday because we did not use DNA. There was not CCTV everywhere.
No, like, and it's like all these like police offices weren't connected. Like there'd be a crime in one state.
Exactly.
And no one would hear about it. It's like, what were you doing?
I watched the Yorkshire Ripper documentary on Netflix and it was like, they were putting tips on cards. There was just almost like a Dewey Decimal System way of filing tips and clues. And it was like, you're never going to find him. And then they didn't. And the guy lived like right in the town they were looking. He was like right there. Yeah. They interviewed him twice. Like, so it's wild to me that there.
It's almost surprising there weren't more crimes, or maybe there were, I don't know. I read about crimes today too. Apparently like 50% of them go unsolved.
Yeah. But like, it all has to have all the right formula and like the right twists and turns to make it into a Netflix thing, I guess. But I am just always so shocked that still in this modern age, we still have like enough. But then I kind of love stuff like, I love the one, Don't Fuck With the Cats, where it was like, what's going on? Like, you know, I had heard of that crime, but the way that they did that one was so cool. And then there's this other one that's on Netflix that's about a guy who like reported his wife missing. And then literally the entire documentary is clips of video clips and Facebook messages and text messages. Like it's a full multimedia clip. It, and then, you know, obviously the husband fucking did it. But yeah. I forgot what that one's called. But like, it's not American Nightmare because that's a new one that's out right now. Now I don't know if I can bring myself to.
Yeah. Maybe just watch a comedy instead. Just one night. Something a little lighter. Honestly, do you think America's obsession with true crime will ever end? Or do you think it's just who we are?
Honestly, I don't know if we'll ever find an end to it. I do think people are like sort of horrifically obsessed with murder in a way that they feel like the devil, you know, maybe a little bit. Like, oh, if I watch enough documentaries, I'll know how to protect myself from a serial killer or from anybody, my husband killing me or anybody, I guess. But like, that's the thing about SVU is like, I think the reason why so many women love it is because it is like, it has taught women a lot of things. Like it has taught people like about be wary, be safe, go like, this is what you do. This is what the process looks like if you are going to report an assault. And like, maybe you don't want to do that. There's ups and downs to that. Like, you know, but I think that like also that show specifically is like a fantasy of the justice system. We always say, cause like Olivia Benson, people are like, I don't want to press charges. And she's like, I'm still going to work the case. It's like, in what world, in what world is a cop like working on a case that no one's even bringing charges. But you know, I think that the true crime thing is just, we're sort of fascinated by it. We're also fascinated by the whole, like, he was the nicest guy. You would never know, like all the dark things. Ultimately, true crime is like the pinnacle of gossip in a way. It's like, wow, you couldn't believe your neighbor was having an affair. He didn't seem like that kind of guy. Oh, you couldn't believe your neighbor was, you know, looking at child pornography. Oh my God. And then it's like up the ladder to fucking, he's a murderer or BTK was like a good husband. His daughter loved him, like, you know, and he was just committing horrific crimes and got caught because he needed the credit so fucking badly because he was had that much hubris. So I don't know. It's like
they catch somebody like the BTK, then all his friends are like, he was so nice.
Yeah. And there's plenty of people that are like, oh no, he was so weird and did weird things and killed animals and we should have known about this, you know, like. But like no one really said, oh, Jeffrey Dahmer was the nicest guy. But then there's other killers that are totally nice guys in plain sight. So
it's fucked
wild.
Up.
It's Wait, wild. Tara. But I don't think we're ever going to lose our taste for it, sadly, as a society.
Yeah, I agree with you because the stakes are so high. It feels so real. There's also an element of it when you're watching like a true crime doc where you're seeing people interviewed that you would never normally see on TV, right?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
I have kept you so long, Tara. You are so nice
to be here and
do this.
No worries.
Thank you. Is there anything that you would tell your podcast fans that they might be surprised by? Something about your life or your comedy that your fans would love to hear?
Oh, my God. I mean, I'm here for your fans, Greg. I want these people to move over and start listening to my podcast, you know? But my podcast... people know fucking everything about me. Like I can't even think of what I would tell them that would surprise me. There's like a running gag on the show that I've had so many different jobs. Like I've had all these like weird jobs in my life and like sort of like entertainment-y jobs and stuff. And so they all do like, they're like drinking game, drink. Kara just mentioned another job, you know, where I'll be like, oh yeah, I worked at the Olympics, you know, like, so they're, you know, but they're not surprised by anything I think, except if I bring up a random job.
Which Olympics?
The 2006 Torino Olympics I worked at for the Today Show.
That is huge. Did you work with Matt Lauer?
I did. And you know what? Speaking of the guy that you don't know, speaking of the nice guy next door, couldn't have been nicer. Matt Lauer was so nice that when he left before we left, because we were the runners, we had to stay to do like cleanup and stuff after the Olympics were over. He goes, Kara, there's a bunch of bottles of wine at my apartment. Go grab those after I leave. You and the runners can enjoy those. Nice guy. I mean, he never locked a door using a button on me, but it probably would have been harder to install that over in Italy.
My team of attorneys here at the gas station are telling me to change the subject to any other true crime.
true crime wise, I'm trying to think of, like I said, those few that I, there's those few like where they're doing something in kind of a different way. I like Dateline kind of drives me insane, like because of how slow it moves and how they, at every commercial break, they backtrack and say something you already said. But I will say I really enjoyed the, either The Truth About Pam or There's Something About Pam. It was a Dateline podcast that Keith Morrison did. And then it turned into a Renee and it turned into a Renee Zellweger show.
Yeah, I watched that whole show.
But the podcast was fun. So, you know, I always feel like I'm at my, there's so many TV shows I need to be watching and I'm just so busy and I only have like a few hours a night to watch TV. So so I got to get in, but I do want to watch that American Nightmare one. And
The Truth About Pam was funny. It was really funny how 2 years ago they made a show called Candy with Jessica Biel. And then they remade the same show with Elizabeth Olsen on HBO. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah, that is, but that actually is a true crime documentary that I was very into right about the time that I had my first daughter, like 2018, 2019, that one came out. The Abducted in Plain Sight is what it's called.
Yeah, with a guy called B.
Yeah, and that is like, that documentary, that was like when people were just writing on Facebook or whatever going, just watch it. I'm not going to tell you anything about it. Just watch it. And I watched it and was like, what the fuck?
She got kidnapped like 3 times and her parents were just like, hey, how's it going when she called?
Yeah.
They'd be like, what's up?
Yeah, they were religious. You know, there's sort of a thing to that where they don't, they kind of weren't asking questions and didn't think about it. And, but he was also manipulating the two parents. He was having sexual relationships with both of the parents to get to the daughter. It's wild. Abducted in Plain Sight. They made 2 scripted series about it that Greg mentioned. They did an SVU about it that we covered.
Oh my God. No, I'm talking about a different one. I think Abducted in Plain Sight was like Jake Gacy. Was that the actor? No.
Abducted in Plain Sight is the neighbor and the girl. That's that one.
Oh my God.
Are you thinking of Who Took Johnny Gosh?
I'm sorry. I love this. I'm thinking of
Where's Johnny or
Candy,
whatever.
It was a show. It was an acted show called Candy with Jessica Biel. And it's called Something Else with Elizabeth Olsen. And it's just about a woman who's having an affair and murders the church friend. It's not quite Abducted in Plain Sight.
Oh, I thought Candy.
I'm leaving all of this in because I can't wait to sort it out myself.
Yeah, you're right. Wait, they made a scripted show about Abducted in Plain Sight.
Yeah,
though.
It was for NBC with Jake Gacy. Is that dude's name? I thought he was like a funny dude.
When you
dude.
Said Jake Gacy, I was like, Johnny Gosh? Wait.
We'll figure it out.
Oh, no. You know what? I know who it's Abducted in Plain Sight TV show because it's a friend of the family. Okay. I'll take this again. Okay, wait. Now I got my confusion. Jake Lacy is in a movie called A Friend of the Family, which is a scripted show about Abducted in Plain Sight.
Yeah.
What
it's
is
not a movie.
Candy
it's like
based on?
10 hours.
It's
Candy is based on a small town Texas murder in the 80s that then Elizabeth Olsen made the same show for HBO with Jesse Plemons. And it's so weird because Jessica Biel made it a year earlier. It's based on Candy, who killed somebody. I'm sorry, I don't have more information.
Oh, it's called Love and Death. Love and Death. And it's about Candy. Wow.
I absolutely love it. You know, I am like so grateful that you came and talked to me. I hope maybe we can do it again sometime. I feel like I can't keep you any longer.
Yeah, anytime.
You have a
anytime.
Life. You are the absolute greatest. Maybe I need to talk more about true crime on my podcast. Would you recommend that? And then maybe I'd have more like, I don't know.
It's like, the thing is like, we do a lot of research into these true crimes, but like we are combining it with 2 other elements, which is a recap and an interview. Not to mention we do an intro and an outro of us just shooting the shit and kind of wrapping up.
So
we're giving you the 20 to 30 minute version of the crime where like, if you're listening to me, that's not where you should be getting the most of your information. You know what I mean? Like we're giving you factual information and we are researching and we're using sources and everything, but it's like, there are 10 part documentaries on some of these killers that we cover and I'm condensing it into 30 minutes. So you know, we're trying to give you true crime with like a little bit of funny, a little bit of social commentary. But if you want like the facts, you got to go to like these true crime podcasts that are just true crime, I think, and like are doing like tireless research and have research assistants and this and that, you know. But I think some people like that. They like our little bite-sized murders, you know?
Definitely. Kara, I can't thank you enough for being here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been fun to catch up.
I could catch up more. I have such fond memories of NYC comedy. Please say hi to Jared,
your husband.
Next time, maybe, could I book the two of you at the same time? Would that be fun?
Oh, yeah, that would be fun. Let's do it. Let's do it.